You're listening to the Doc Lounge podcast. This is a place for candid conversations with the healthcare industry's top physicians, executives, and thought leaders. This podcast is made possible by Pacific Companies, your trusted advisor in physician recruitment.
Welcome back to the Doc Lounge podcast, where we bring you real conversations with physicians, healthcare leaders, and experts shaping the future of medicine. Today, we're diving into a topic that's top of mind for families and providers across the country: vaccine confidence, public health, and what's really happening with the resurgence of measles in the U.S. I'm joined today by Dr. Michael T. Myers, Jr., a Harvard-trained physician with more than 35 years of experience in primary care, pediatrics, and healthcare leadership. He's a former chief of primary care and chief of pediatrics for Summit Health in New Jersey, and has held leadership roles with organizations like Mass General, Brigham, and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. Dr. Myers is also the author of an upcoming book, The Vaccine Bible, a practical plain English guide designed to help families understand how vaccines are developed, tested, and used in real-world care. In this episode, we're breaking down what clinicians and families should be thinking about right now as measles cases rise again, how to navigate uncertainty, and how to make informed decisions in a landscape that can often feel overwhelming. So, Dr. Myers, we're really excited to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Stacey. I'm honored by having been invited. Look forward to our conversation.
Well, we're honored to have you on with your very impressive background and all the work that you're doing to build awareness around vaccine education, which is so important and timely right now with what we're seeing. So give us a little bit, let's set the stage. What are we seeing right now? What is driving this resurgence of measles in the U.S.?
We are seeing an increasing skepticism and parents opting out of vaccinating their children. And when it comes to an infectious disease germ like measles or the measles virus, which is one of the most infectious germs known to humankind, you need to have essentially 95% of people in a community either vaccinated against or having had prior exposure to the measles virus so that they're immune. What we're seeing, though, nationally, for instance, the CDC and other organizations measure vaccination rates among kindergartners. So for the 2024-2025 school year, the rate of measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination among kindergartens was 92.5%. So that's actually below the 95% needed. And in some communities and counties, it's much lower, particularly in the places where you've seen the outbreak occur. Most recently, South Carolina, where over 1,000 cases have been recorded. Since this outbreak started in Texas in January 2025, we are now at about 4,000 cases. Almost 500 people have been hospitalized, and three deaths have occurred in 2025. So it's a serious issue.
That is a serious issue. And it sounds like, you know, the 95% is something that's obviously been proven in science. And so what do you think has caused that shift to now? Is it really just public perception, or what do you think has changed versus like 10 years ago when we weren't seeing this as much?
Well, I think there's several ways to think about this. I mean, let me just say this. Vaccines have been too successful at actually preventing people from having a lived experience with paralytic polio or whooping cough or the pseudomembrane that develops in the back of your throat when you have diphtheria or, you know, measles, which I don't know, people think of as some sort of viral rash. This is a terrible disease for children, for older people, for immune-compromised people. It can cause encephalitis, deafness, permanent intellectual disability, serious pneumonia, and up to three people among 1,000 cases die from this viral illness. So I think we have let our collective guard down because we have been basically lulled into a sense of security by a world free of infectious diseases because of vaccines. And then misinformation has stepped in and now everyone is confused. And that's why I actually wrote the book. It's actually to reassure people that everything is fine, all is well. Let's stay on measles for a second. We've been using the measles vaccine successfully worldwide since 1903. I mean, that is a very long time to be using a medical technology. Billions of doses have been given to people all over the world safely, effectively. And that's the thing that I think people should understand is that these are technologies that are decades old, proven FDA safe and effective.
Thank you for that clarification. I know there is a lot of this, you know, different sources of information that people are getting, and it can sometimes conflict with science and what we've seen that has worked and been proven for, you know, like you said, I mean, several decades now. So tell us, I guess, in your practice, and it, obviously you created this book for a reason, what are the things that people are most concerned about getting a vaccine? What do they perceive as negative?
Well, let me first, and we're going to stay in measles again, since you opened with that. And I think it's a very good illustration of where we are right now as an American society. There is no connection. It has been proven in multiple scientific studies between the measles vaccine and autism. Many vaccines, including the measles vaccine, can cause some localized side effects, arm soreness, a bit of fever, that kind of thing. The relationship or the alleged connection that was basically spoken about in 1998 between the vaccine and autism does not exist. There has not been a single death associated with the measles vaccine when it's given to normal people. Prior to 1963, the pre-vaccine era, there were 500 deaths a year happening on average from the measles infection. I'm going to tell you why that's important, because people tend to equate getting an illness and natural immunity with vaccines themselves and any risks that they could present. The two are not equivalent. Vaccines have actually proven scientifically to be safe and effective. And if you basically subject yourself to something that's preventable from a vaccine like measles, you're running a great risk. And it's been shown over and over again. So this idea that there's an equivalency between getting an illness and getting a vaccine, or there's a risk that's lessened by the infection itself versus the vaccine, doesn't exist. Vaccines are superior at protecting us from illnesses that cause a lot of morbidity and death, particularly measles.
Thank you for that clarification and giving us, you know, obviously the science and the medical research behind that. And so I know you said, obviously, there's been all these studies that have been performed. Is there a place that you read? I mean, obviously, you're reading that in medical literature, but if somebody was also curious, does that include in your book, or tell us a little bit about that?
So if any consumer is interested in reading, let's say, the scientific literature, the immediate place they can go for this is to FDA.com or .gov, excuse me. And every FDA-approved vaccine, and there are a few versions of the measles. Well, let me just say this. In the United States, you just can't get a measles shot by itself. It's usually a combination vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella, or measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox, MMRV, chickenpox being varicella. You can actually download something called patient information. This is the insert that's inside. You can actually, the physician insert. Those provide, they're a little like, you know, the fine print, but those provide the scientific basis that gave rise to why the vaccine was FDA approved. So if you have any concerns about the scientific basis for any vaccine, it's right there on the FDA website, fda.gov. Look up the vaccine MMR2 or MMRV, download the prescriber information or the provider information and read it yourself. It's right there, you know, in black and white. And then you can actually, from that point, there's a bibliography, there are references, you can go to other sources. I think another very good source are both the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Family Physicians websites. They'll publish white papers. They'll publish scientific articles that are put out there to face the public. And so you want to be able to get that information and read it yourself. It's right there on those websites as well. And then I have obviously a discussion of these topics in my book that's coming out in July.
Fantastic. I want to shift here a little bit in a minute to families, but while we're talking about that, obviously one of the reasons we wanted you on today on the Doc Lounge podcast is to help and share all that you've learned and all the research that you obviously have just from being a practicing clinician as well. What do you recommend physicians, how they have this conversation with when families come in and they are apprehensive? How do you recommend they go about that?
You know, I think what I would first say is that doctors should meet patients and families where they are, whatever their concerns happen to be. People are going to come in with, and they can't help but be, somewhat vaccine skeptical. They'll have a lot of questions. Current changes to the immunization schedule, quite honestly, have introduced more doubt and uncertainty. Certain vaccines that used to be, you know, strongly recommended have now been moved to a category called shared clinical decision making, which sounds innocuous, but it introduces the idea that a vaccine, which has been used again safely and effectively for decades, somehow requires some deep discussion, the way you would talk about chemotherapy or some, you know, participation in a clinical trial. Things don't really require that. I think doctors first need to meet patients and families where they are, and they're going to come in, right, with concerns about the additives, the preservatives, why are there all these combination vaccines together? Is this something that's safe for my kid to actually get? Can I split out doses over time? You know, they're going to have a lot of questions they probably didn't have when I was growing up or you were growing up with their pediatricians and their family physicians. I think also more and more doctors need to understand that they are the trusted voice. They are the authority. And really at the end of the day, I think families and patients and children need to trust what their physicians tell them. I mean, they're in the driver's seat together with the care of the families and the kids entrusted to them. And so, and I know doctors go, you don't go into pediatrics or family practice to make a ton of money. I mean, people are there because it's going to sound really Pollyanna, but they care about people. They want to help people. They are deeply interested in the outcomes of their patients. And I've listened to some of your own podcasts on the show. I know that many of your guests emphasize the caring nature of what drives people to this profession. There are no other more caring doctors than pediatricians, primary care, and family physicians. So they're the trusted source, and they're also a source of authority, you know, and I'm not saying that you need to wag your finger at a patient, because people need to have space and make space for dialogue, even disagreement or questioning. All of that is okay. And again, I think with my book, what I'm trying to do is not that people shouldn't have an opinion, but they should have some sort of basis or context for understanding what vaccines are, what these germs are that you're being protected against, what's actually in that vial that you're putting into my arm. How is this thing regulated? Like, how do you really know it's safe, you know, and effective? And all those topics are addressed in the vaccine Bible that, you know, will be coming out soon this summer. So bottom line is that doctors should feel fine in having a conversation, a frank conversation, and meeting patients and families where they are with their concerns.
Fantastic advice, and couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's a topic I've talked about many times. I feel like family medicine physicians, pediatricians, they are the least paid within the physician specialties, and they really should have a lot higher pay for all they do and really all they do to feed the whole system and the ecosystem of health. So definitely with you there. Now, talking about that, so let's kind of transition now to thinking about families. And one thing I like that you say, and I think this is an important way to frame thing, is when you think about vaccine risk versus disease risk, how do you, when you're talking with family, kind of lay that out.
Again, as I said earlier, vaccines have done an exceedingly good job at shielding the world and our country from understanding what it's like to develop paralytic polio or these terrible illnesses. Unfortunately, because of the low vaccination rates for a number of these illnesses, we're going to start to see more and more of a resurgence. I think measles is almost the canary in the coal mine because it is one of the most infectious germs, but we're going to start to see other illnesses like polio, like whooping cough, like diphtheria start to make a serious return, not to mention another pandemic. And so families need to just understand that these vaccines, which are regulated and tested first and foremost by the manufacturer through a series of clinical trials, and then subjected to a great degree of review and scrutiny and on-site inspections and everything else by the FDA, by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And so when they're made available to the public, they are safe for public use, and they continue to be monitored for safety, you know, through time. And need to have an understanding that these aren't novel technologies. They've been around, again, as I said before. Diphtheria vaccine was first developed in the 1940s. We had a polio vaccine in 1955. As I said, measles came to fruition in 1963. I mean, all of these vaccines and other ones that have been added to the immunization schedule. So there's a rich scientific context and history for the development of these vaccines and their use. And there is continued safety monitoring of every vaccine, even after it's licensed by a number of different agencies.
Great summary there of, you know, really how to think about vaccines and the process that it takes for them to get to where it's actually being out there and available to the public.
Well let me, I didn't address the Part B side of your question. So let me just do that for a moment. Ahead. The vaccines have been developed against terrible illnesses. That's why we develop vaccines, because in fact, many of them are against viral illnesses where there aren't antibiotics. There's no other treatment except preventing. Once you get measles, there's no antibiotic we can give you to lessen the outcome or the prognosis of that illness. So getting the illness itself is a danger. That's why the vaccine was developed. And many of these vaccines are against viral illnesses for which there is no other type of therapy available except symptomatic care and hoping your immune system has enough, you know, engine to mount a response. That's what vaccines are meant to do, actually, to help, you know, train that engine and kind of get it revved up a bit more. But just to kind of keep that in mind, these are vaccines that have been developed against diseases for which there aren't any other therapeutic options. That's why we have to prevent them from harming us.
So important. Yeah, that sums it up very eloquently. So let's talk about measles right now. What should a parent do if they feel their child may have been exposed to measles?
So let me step back and say that right now, the normal immunization schedule calls for a child to basically get two shots. Usually a baby will get a shot between 12 and 15 months, and then later between 4 to 6 years. Once you have that two shot series, you are 97% protected for life against measles. So measles looks like, in the beginning, a bad cold or the flu. There are these things called coplet spots at the back of your throat or the characteristic rash. But those don't develop for many days after you've been exposed to the measles. So the first thing a parent should understand is, like, what is my child's immunization record? Because even if they are in a school system or a community where measles has broken out, if they have at least gotten that two-shot series, the child's protected. If they have anything less than the two-shot series, there's a higher incidence and probability that that illness, the cold, the stomach ache, the throwing up, and then the rash that's very characteristic of measles is actually that particular illness. So if a parent has a high likelihood of suspicion by their child's symptoms or what they've heard at school or what they know about in their communities, you know, obviously call your doctor immediately and don't get in your car and drive to the office. Have a conversation. Many times, a lot of this can be done through a telemedicine visit or by phone. So I would say, first and foremost, have the parent contact the child's pediatrician or family doctor or primary care physician and talk the symptoms and review the immunization history of the child with the practitioner. That's the first step.
Thank you for that. And I know that that answers some questions too, because there is confusion around the incubation period and kind of how that works. So somebody right. could be exposed and they're then have symptoms similar to a regular cold or flu.
Cold or flu, right, for several days until the rash erupts. And then at that point, yeah, it's pretty easy to make a diagnosis of measles, particularly when you know there's a measles outbreak happening in your community.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Now tell us a little bit about, Dr. Myers, what inspired you to write the Vaccine Bible? What got you to do this?
So I think I have to go back to COVID in 2020 or maybe even further, because I am a physician. I went to medical school, obviously, but kind of in my Walter Mitty fantasy life, I wanted to be a writer, like, you know, novelist or a poet or I don't know. And what happened with many physician leaders in the pandemic, particularly medical directors or chief medical officers, irrespective of your background and training, is almost instantaneously in mid-March 2020, all of us had to become infectious disease, epidemiology, public health professionals, like just learn all this stuff. So I was also involved in that because we had to keep our practice and our physicians up to date. And we were, you know, waiting for the clinical trials to actually produce a vaccine. And there was every single day, even several times during the day, the news would change. So for me, what came out of that was a deep interest in not only SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19, but the whole vaccine development process. I wrote my first book was actually a textbook called COVIDology, a Field Guide. And it was really for STEM students in junior and senior college, or maybe a master's of public health level, sort of taking the lessons of the pandemic to explore basic science or healthcare regulations. And then from there, I was contacted by a literary agent about this idea of stepping into the space and developing what I call the Fannie Farmer Cookbook of Vaccines, just a really basic, you know, fact-filled, approachable, accessible book, literally from anthrax to Zika, from A to Z. You can, you know, in 4 or 5 pages, you can learn about the disease the vaccine prevents, how the vaccine was made, its safety profile, the cultural context, the controversies of the vaccine, the bottom line in terms of what it's meant to do. And so you can read very quickly and then have a conversation with your physician. And then the earlier part of the book, you know, I don't expect you to be a scientist or a doctor, or maybe this all freaked you out in high school, but I do have to take you through some basic biology, immunology, infectious disease, just going to understand like how this whole thing works. So we do that in what's called the preliminaries. And there's a section called essentials, where vaccines or groups of people, actually like children or adults or people that travel, will commonly be referred to get a series of vaccines. So I tell the story of that demographic group or that collection of vaccines in what's called the essentials. So that's what it is in a nutshell. I stepped into the space to meet a need to actually provide the general public with just basic information, which is what primary care doctors do. We do a lot of education and explaining to folks. So it felt very natural. And for me personally, it fulfilled this writing, you know, urge I had. Maybe I'll write the great American novel, but so far I'm like a science guy. I'm a science writer. So here I am writing books about vaccines or COVID or whatever it is. So we'll see.
I love that. Well, it sounds like a fun adventure for you, and we can all benefit from that. So it sounds like something for physicians, maybe residents, fellows to take a look
Absolutely.
At.
Absolutely.
actually families.
Yes.
So if a family, if a parent could take away one thing from your book, what would you want it to be?
The one thing would be that all is well. Vaccines are safe. We have been using these technologies for decades to protect us against terrible infectious illnesses and certain cancers like cervical cancer or liver cancer. And people should be reassured that things that they're hearing about on the internet from other sources just aren't true. Have a conversation with your doctor. Get my book, read my book, go to websites like the American Academy of Pediatrics or Family Physicians, and just be reconfirmed in your belief that these technologies are fine for your use and for use with your children. And that's the one takeaway. All is well, all is more than well, and people should just be reassured by that. That's the main takeaway.
Thank you, Dr. Myers. Now tell everybody where they can go to learn more about your work and get access to the book. I believe you're in pre-order phase right now, right?
We are in pre-order mode. You can go to one word, Dr. Mike Myers, DrMikeMyers.com or thevaccinebible.com or vaccinebible.com. It'll all come to the same landing page. The book is on pre-order now. It doesn't drop until Tuesday, July 28th. And the website will have some other materials that you'll be able to peruse as well. So that's where people can find the book.
Well, let's get your pre-orders going. That's exciting. We're so honored to have you on today. So thank you so much for your time, Dr. Myers.
Thank you, Stacy. I really appreciate the great conversation we've had today.
Thank you to all of our listeners. If you would like to be notified when new episodes air, make sure to hit that subscribe button. And a big thank you to Pacific Companies. Without you guys, this podcast would not be possible. If you would like to be a guest, please go to www.pacificcompanies.com. Thank you.